All right, everyone, welcome to the fourth episode of Terra Crumbs, a Terra show by the community, for the community. As always, it's me, Imani, with Poppy and Eli, and we're joined by someone who needs no introduction, Ryan Lyon. But before we get started, Terra Crumbs is for informational and educational purposes only. Nothing on this show is advice. Nothing we say is an inducement to a particular investment or follow a particular strategy. Anything you invest is at your own risk. Do your own research. Consult with professionals. Mr. Lyon, welcome to Terra Crumbs. We are excited to have you.
Hey guys, how are you? Nice to meet you guys.
Let's jump right in. So before we get into Ryan's background and everything that's going on over at GT Capital, I want to talk about some alpha that we're finally delivering to our listeners. We've been more of kind of a beta show than an alpha show, but we have something for you finally. So those of you who have probably heard that Kotto recently launched Kotto Pay, the ability to buy online on Amazon directly with UST. They want to sponsor a giveaway on the show. We're going to be giving away $2,000 sponsored by Kotto for you to spend using their UST on Kotto to buy gifts for the holidays. They're going to be on, I think, either next week or the week after to let us know exactly how that giveaway is going to work. But stay tuned to Terra Crumbs for all of the information. And as part of that, I've mentioned before, by the way, that I'm a Kotto advisor, and so I'm helping them get the word out. As part of this tie up with them and this giveaway that they've done for the Terra Crumbs community, I've also wanted to give back a little something as well. And so one of the things I wanted to do was help kind of spice up Eli's room, get him set up for success. And so each week through the holidays, I'm going to be buying Eli something special, something that useful for him, using Kotto, using my UST. And as you can see, if you've watched the episodes before, we've gotten Eli a new chair. Eli, the reason for this, if you don't know, is that Eli has been using, and he's a student, right? So he spends a lot of time studying at his desk, doing homework, working on a chair made of, it looks like it was carved out of a solid piece of wood 44 to five decades ago. Nice craftsmanship, but not ergonomic, not the kind of thing you want to spend hours on working on, trying to edit Pete and Evan's multiple terabytes videos. So we've got a new chair. How do you like it?
I don't really share the same connection that I shared with the wood chair, but this thing works. It works. It's a pink and it's cat themed, which I do love. I don't know if you knew this, but I actually was a really big Hello Kitty fan growing up. So this is more of like a dream come true than anything. Less of a burden and more of just extreme, unaltered happiness.
Yeah, well, I'm just, I would like to thank Kotto for helping make it happen. And we'll have more coming soon. I've got a few ideas of some things that are really going to help, Eli's setup there. But if you have any ideas, shoot me a note directly on a DM on Twitter and we can see if we can make it happen. Let's get to Ryan, man. Do you want to give us a little bit about your background? How did you get into crypto? How did you get into Terra? And then we'll talk about GT Capital.
Yeah, sure. My story is probably the same as many people. I originally got into crypto way back in 2014. In my day job, I spend a lot of time hanging around technologists, and some of them were talking about Bitcoin. And I've got a bit of an obsessive personality disorder where when I hear about something, I just go 100%. And back in 2014, I went Bitcoin mad for probably about 6 months, and then got bored and decided to sell. That was probably the biggest regret of my life to date. I sat and watched what happened in 2017, 2018 from afar with just the pain of lost opportunity. And then I didn't get back into crypto until it was January this year. I remember specifically what happened because my dog had puppies, and I was up in the middle of the night for about a week, making sure that the puppies were okay. And to pass the time, I was kind of scrolling through Twitter, and it's kind of a sad story, really, because at the time it was the day that Doge was pumping from like a cent to 8 cents in a day, and it just caught my attention, and then just kind of got wrapped back into the whole crypto sphere. I probably picked up Luna pretty early, you know, initially, again, probably similar to lots of people. I was just playing around on an exchange, buying all kinds of crap, hoping for the best, just looking for some price action. And I came across Luna, I think it was around about the time, it was about $1.50, something like that. It just been on a pump. Yeah, and that was the first time I came across Luna. Over the next kind of few months, so I started to do like more research into the fundamentals of the things that I was holding. And, you know, Luna really just stood out to me as an incredible coin with great tokenomics and real world use case. You know, I think it was around the time reading about Chai. Mirror had already launched, and then you had the whole GameStop and AMC thing going on in America, where they literally switched off the stock exchanges, and then you had Anchor coming out with the like unbelievable you know, interest rate on savings, and you know, I was looking at all these use cases and just thought, you know, this is amazing. So I kept kind of going down that rabbit hole. Then kind of May came around, and I, you know, that time I was juggling a bunch of coins, and I hit a bunch of stop losses, and, you know, it was a terrible day for me, and as it was for many people in crypto. And at that point, I just decided, look, I'm, you know, fundamental wise, you know, I love everything that's going on Terra. I'm just going all in. It's, you know, that's me. You know, I've kind of picked up a bit of a following within the community. I'm not quite sure why. It's kind of a mix of fundamentals, threads, memes, whatever, and just relentless every single day, just, you know, pumping things, trying to grow the community, trying to get the message out there.
Yeah, it's a crazy ride. Like, everyone has that, or almost everyone who's not a billionaire right now has that moment where they got into crypto and didn't stick around long enough. You know, that one time they sold early. God, and all of the regret that comes around that. But yeah, man, you've been you're super active in the community. I follow you mostly for the South Park GIFs, but, you know, maybe that's just me. I tried to find a video to post on here, but I couldn't find one in time. But I think everyone who follows you knows which one I'm talking about.
I started that when we were coming back up from the May dip, and I started it at $10. And just thought, this will be a fun thing. Like, you know, every dollar we go up, I'll just throw the meme out there. And now it's got to the stage where, you know, especially this week, it's been like several days of hitting all-time high every few hours. And I literally have people tagging me on Twitter, DMing me, hit me up on Telegram being like, Ryan, where's the meme? Where's the meme? I literally can't get away from it at this point, but there you go.
And my, so I was trying to find it so I could put it, cause you can put videos in here. My Google search is just in bad shape right now. If someone were to look at it with the different different terms that I was having to search for to try to pull that up.
if you're listening to browsing history afterwards.
Yeah, no, for sure. If you're listening to this and you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm not going to describe it. Just go on his thread and you'll find it. Well, cool. I love the backstory. I would love to hear. So 2 weeks ago, I decided that I kind of noticed that everyone on my Luna thread was either an intern capital or they were in GT capital. And if they weren't in one of those two, even more annoyingly, they were pumping KDA or QRDO, which I've already muted. But tell me, so we had someone from intern, we had Gray from Intern Capital on last week, and it was a great show to kind of understand what they were up to. Tell me about GT Capital. I know you told me kind of offline you didn't want to be the spokesperson for the entire organization, but what are you guys up to? What does it mean? What do you guys do?
So first and foremost, you know, I'm certainly not the front man for GT. I know I kind of throw myself up there on the AMAs that we're doing with different projects, but, you know, it's a real community thing. You know, at the fundamental level, GT Capital is just a Telegram group, right? It's a bunch of absolute hardcore lunatics that kind of got together around about June time in the middle of the crash, kind of giving each other emotional support, essentially, and kind of working our way through the pain and trying to, you know, find a shining light at the end of the tunnel.
Trying to stay strong. Stay strong. Yes. Don't give up.
We really needed it at that time. There's about 20 of us, and it's a mix of, like, people who are big in the community. We've got a couple of project founders in there. We've got some analysts. We've got, you know, people from all different backgrounds across the globe as well. We've got people from Australia, Asia, Europe, UK, US. As Terra was growing again and projects were starting to launch, you know, we saw an opportunity essentially to try and, you know, the ultimate goal, I think, is to try and bring the community, the Terra community, closer to the projects that are building on Terra. So we got a couple of things that are going on. One is we're under works. We've got a Terra job board that we're putting together with the idea that all the different projects they're building that are looking for different resources, whether that be developers, front end guys, community managers, whatever it might be, they can put up their needs on this job board, and we can connect the community to that. We've also got a DT Capital validator that we're spinning up in the next week or so. And there'll be some more comms on that coming up soon in terms of, like, the various incentives that we're looking to put together towards staking to that validator. And then we've kind of got this, like, grand plan of forming some sort of DAO that's community focused, that, you know, people can be a part of, and ultimately, like, trying to make that into some sort of community VC that allows the community to invest early in Terra projects and, you know, hopefully reap some of the rewards of doing that.
Nice. Yeah, I think, yeah, it's needed, right? Like, we need some, it seems like, you know, TFL wants to decentralize or wants to lean a little more towards decentralization. And so to the extent that we can see these different organizations spring up that help support the community and drive, you know, the total mission forward without everything having to come, you know, and be supported directly by Doe and the team at TFL, I think that's kind of a positive development. So
you guys own the Lunatics Telegram channel now. How's that paying off as far as investment goes?
Well, I mean, we got put in a pretty difficult situation there. The previous owner of the Lunatics Telegram group essentially was saying that they were wanting to move on from that, we're planning on putting the Lunatics Telegram for sale on the open market. We, as a group, felt like that would be very bad for the community because it could very easily fall into the hands of someone who just wanted to use the community to try and shill things to or make money out of, or someone who came, you know, would come with bad intentions. So as an investment, it's, you know, we're not expecting any returns from that investment, and you know, it was kind of something that we had to do. We just wanted what's best for the community at the end of the day. We're going to try and bring some added value in there. We're going to host some of our AMAs in there, and just trying to bring the community closer to the projects that are launching. And essentially, you know, we're just the thing, it's just going to be given back to the community at the end of the day. They'll certainly never be sold again, as long as I'm involved anyway.
Very cool.
I have a proposition for you. I have a solid 9 Luna in my Terra station right now. What are the odds you sell me Lunatics? Because I'm not trying to shill anything. I just have a few NFT projects that I want to kind of get out there.
Eli, if you want to apply to be an administrator in the Lunatics Telegram group, you know, come and talk to me. If you want to come and talk to the community about your NFT projects that you're working on, you're more than welcome to. It's
oh,
open
my goodness.
To
thank you. Wow.
No Luna needed.
Okay. Thank you.
It's a very noble cause, Ryan. Although, you know, I kind of wonder though, if some like scammer or promoter bought the channel and just started promoting garbage to Lunatics, I think the backlash would probably be pretty funny on its own.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, lots of people said, like, just make a new group, right? And I think, like, a few times people had tried to make offshoot groups, and it's you know, it just take time to build that entire community up. Like, it's there, it exists. Like, it is what it is. I don't spend a whole lot of time there. You guys may or may not do, but a lot of people, especially new people coming into the community, find it valuable and a good place to go and have some fun with other lunatics. So I hear what you're saying, Papi. And
I don't know. In the early days, it was kind of like a coming to passage to get banned from the lunatics channel.
well, one of the first things we did was we had some acts of forgiveness where we unbanned a few people who had been banned and were pretty bitter about it and said, like, look, it's a new dawn, come and get back involved. I believe that someone did ban the previous owner, which was great.
Yeah, it's whoever. I don't know, did you guys pull capital to buy that, or did one person? I saw that one person had bought it. Did that person have to shoulder that themselves, or did you guys all come together on that?
So they've kind of taken the brunt up front, but we're hoping to reimburse them over time.
Yeah, we should talk about that, like, maybe offline. We don't have to get into it here. If we can maybe raise some money to get that person their money back, because that's really a kind of like a community good, and one person shouldn't have to own all of that. So maybe we'll do in a future show, we'll do a little bit of a fundraise. So what's next on here? Do you guys, I could talk a little bit. I went down to Miami for the Decentral conference, and I was shocked. You know, we're making a big splash in the Terra community with Terra Crumbs. I had at a minimum 4 people recognize me, which was a pretty big deal for my life. You know, no one's ever recognized me before.
Did anyone ask you for your autograph, Marnie?
No, I did not get a request for autographs. Typically, you know what they typically, the first question was, where are Poppy and Eli? It was kind of like, wait, where are the stars of the show?
I did see one funny post from the Bag of Dicks artist that she was asked for her autograph. That made me laugh.
Oh yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I saw them there, Hooligan and what's her name? My Crypto Lude or something like that.
Lude Crypto Waifu, is Lude? It?
Oh, maybe that's what it is. Yeah.
That's funny.
So it was funny, like, I was having to explain to people, no, Eli couldn't make it because he was studying for finals or a presentation or... So yeah. This show, by the way, so you guys, you know, we've been fortunate. Eli, Poppy, we've both been to New York T-Fi Alpha. We both went to Lisbon. If you were going to miss one, this was the one to miss. It was... So just to give you an idea about this thing and like all of the, like everyone I spoke to that came there from Terra were really frustrated with these people as well. The people who ran this conference, but this thing was the primary sponsor for Decentral conference was Bitcoin Latinum. I don't know what Bitcoin Latinum is, but it doesn't sound like the most reputable project. It was in this conference center that was kind of like next to the airport. It was like the conference was in the back of the most depressing mall I've ever been to. it was quite a thing. The party after was a lot of fun. I did get to meet a lot of people, lunatics that were there, and that was kind of the highlight of it. Lots of people there and showed up to support kind of the community. The party after the show was a lot of fun. It was in like the most, it was in the wildest place I've ever been to, like a club/party. It was a shopping mall. And there just happened to be like, we pulled in the taxi and there's, you know, there's like a nail salon. There's a, you know, a chicken place, like a couple of restaurants, a shoe store. But then upstairs, there was like this entire club. And we got there a little bit early for the Galactic Punks party. And I don't think they had mopped yet. So like with every step, you could hear your shoes kind of sticking to the floor. So it was a scene, but it was a lot of fun. But anyway,
I'm glad,
like I
to
said,
hear it and not entirely positive review, Marnie, to be honest, because I'm not gonna lie, sitting here in London and watching you guys go to all these events has been giving me huge FOMO over the last couple of months.
Yeah, well, why did you couldn't at least make it to Portugal? That's not far, same time zone.
Well, I've got a 3-month-old baby, and Mrs. Lyon has been extremely patient with me in terms of allowing me to sit staring at my phone or laptop, but going to another country to have a party with a bunch of strangers is probably a step too far.
I think you're just presenting it wrong. You're not going to a party with a bunch of strangers. You're going to a business. You're going on a business trip to network with your friends.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm fortunate that we have been able to do like a couple of meetups here in the UK. So I've got we've got a small UK lunatics group of about 200 people. We've done a couple of meetups where we've had like 20, 25 people there, and done a couple of GT Capital meetups as well. In fact, coming off the back of one last night, which was pretty fun and good to come together and bash heads.
I would love to do a TFI Alpha London. I would definitely fly out for that. So we need to bring the party to the UK. You guys have a big group out there because I've seen you posting the pictures.
Yeah, someone needs to get Ryan Olar on the phone and make sure it comes over to Europe next time.
Yeah, usually like when I go to an event, like I tell my parents that I'm going to the traveling Mormon Bible school. And that has gone pretty well.
So Poppy, what was it like to be the first anonymous gray-haired frog in Motley Fool?
Honestly, it was quite an honor. You know, despite the content of the article, I thought the content was a bit poor and not very well researched. But it's actually kind of funny because my anonymous Pepe Frog identity is going to have a bigger resume than my real identity.
So for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, I'm sure everyone probably saw, or at least some of you saw the drama about getting Trek Terra passed, right? Like all of us need some way to track our taxes, and there's no good way to do it right now. Like every time I do a transaction on Terra, I'm just like shudder thinking about like the accounting work I'm going to have to do in the background to figure this out at the end of the year. Poppy put a proposal in because he has a project, Trek Terra, that he's been working on that can solve this for us. It just needs a little bit more development. And for a while there, it didn't look good for Poppy and the Trek Terra team, which is astounding given that I think there's something like $400 million. How much money is sitting in that community pool?
About $400 million.
Yeah, $400 million. And we were arguing about allocating, I think,
Ryan,
40K.
Did you say $6 billion? Please educate
isn't
us.
Isn't the entire Burnt Luna fund gone into the community pool, or have I got that wrong?
I think you got that wrong.
Well, if it is $6 billion, it's even more atrocious that we had to argue about this.
Well, okay, so you know, I think there's actually a bigger topic here, and not really focused on any one validator. But I think there are a few validators that just by default always vote no on every proposal unless Doquan made the proposal. there were like, I don't know, it was like five or six different validators with like 1 million allocation all voted no. Stake Systems was the highest with 5 million Luna allocation. So I think it's just, it's its own issue. Like, it's nothing like geared towards these validators. There's no hate there, but I do think the community should be more aware that, you know, some of these validators are just blindly voting no on everything.
I think we're in this is a tough situation. This is something that every DeFi protocol and layer one is going to have to figure out. You've got to start allocating these resources. They're useless to be sitting there in an environment where there's so much work to be done. I understand the natural reaction to be skeptical about people who are coming into the community and asking for money. You know, like there's every once in a while, someone will show up in Anchor or show up on Luna or on the Terra forums and they want $40,000 to do a marketing campaign or something. And you're like, no, that we're not doing that. Who are you? But we've got to figure out some way to start deploying that capital in a way that would make sense. For example, I don't know what it is. I know that like the Delphi guys are working on it, which means they'll probably come up with something brilliant. But even if it was, you know, like, you know, communities that are starting to gain a reputation, like GT Capital, for example, like I would love to see GT Capital come to the table with a proposal to spend money out of that community pool in some kind of way that was going to drive UST adoption and then go execute against it. And I'm just using GT Capital as an example, right? But like, I think over time, we need more organizations that kind of crop up decentralized from the mothership that are coming up with ideas and not being shy to come ask for money from the community, because you know, that's what it's there for, right?
That's a really good point. You know, one thought I have is like maybe like GT Capital and Intern Capital, they could kind of sponsor these projects and kind of de-risk you know, the whole act of allocating community funds towards these types of things, and they can de-risk it through, you know, having advisors or, you know, a large community at Intern Capital who helps control those funds through multisig. And so it could be a very community oriented thing where these large community organizations are sponsoring smaller projects.
Yeah, and I think they're right. Yeah, no, absolutely. Because you guys have started to build, these organizations have started to build reputations within the community. I mean, even, you know, like there is even quite a bit of pushback against Kato and Andromeda, right? And those guys didn't ask for a lot of money. And it's you know, everyone's right to be skeptical when people come to ask for money. But, you know, it turns out that given what both of those two product, those two groups are up to, the amount of money that we allocated to them was actually probably pretty small compared to like what the potential is for what they're going to build. And so the more we can, you know, if we can get some of these communities that have sprung up like Intern Capital and GT Capital to help sponsor some of these, you know, I think everyone would feel more comfortable allocating, you know, larger amounts of dollars. Anyway, that's like a bigger discussion for another day. I've got tons of thoughts around that. I don't know. What do you think, Ryan? Do you guys want to sponsor some community proposals?
That's part of something that we've discussed before about, you know, building up this kind of war chest that we can then utilize, not just for the benefits of the DAO participants, but also to fund, you know, to angel invest in, you know, people are building things on Terra. So I think that's a great idea. Going briefly back to you know, Papi's proposal. You know, it was really an eye opener for me in terms of like seeing how the different validators were behaving, whether that be voting things down or not voting at all. And it felt like we had to get the community together to kind of push those guys along. And I was really pleased to see that, you know, Orion Money came in eventually and helped push it over the line. But it shouldn't really need to get to that. And don't we have like a community grant fund anyway that's kind of sponsored by Terra?
So we do have rapid grants, but they are a bit limited. So they're capped at $30,000. And that's what originally we were going for, is we wanted to go for a rapid grant. And especially back, you know, before the proposal was made to change the amount of collateral you need to post to make to post a governance proposal. Because before it was like $20,000 collateral. So it's like you don't get enough votes and you lose 20K. That could be quite gut wrenching. So originally we applied for a rapid grant, but after, you know, engaging with WAGMI and kind of talking about what we're doing, he didn't think it'd be a good fit for the rapid grant process. I've talked to some other people about this. They disagree with WAGMI's perspective of it. But it is what it is. I'm happy, you know, we kind of went the long road with the community proposal. It was a interesting learning experience. Definitely something I will consider in the future if I have a project that I'll put up for a community proposal. It's a lot of it is, you know, rallying the community behind an idea, and you really do need the support from the community. You can't just, you know, post a proposal and expect it to pass. You need to really engage with people.
Yeah. And I think I would say that we've got to really shout out Larry and what he did to kind of draw attention to what was happening there, because I don't know that it would have garnered the attention that it got if not for him jumping in and pointing that out. I know you did a lot of work on it as well, Poppy. I don't want to take away from what you did, but we got to give that guy some credit for
surfacing. Oh, no. I'm very appreciative of Larry and his engagement there. And you know, the whole community, really. I got so much engagement on Trackterra and just lots of shares and people preaching the word. So I want to thank everyone for their support there. I, you know,
and
literally,
you know,
couldn't do it without you.
What I would say on the WAGMI thing and that those community rapid grants, I think those guys are probably being measured against, you know, that business development team at Terra is being measured against objectives and outcomes. I think the metrics that they're probably aiming for is UST adoption. And so some of these public goods that are kind of outside of driving UST adoption, they're just kind of tools for the community. You know, it probably makes sense for the community to vote on them, right? Versus just getting pushed through. And so I you know, you can make a case that everything ended up exactly the way it should have ended up in terms of how that process played out. So let's keep going. So to bring this full circle though, this entire Trackterra thing somehow ended up in Motley Fool. With a very kind of, it looked like kind of an article that was written for someone's kind of junior high newspaper, but made its way to Motley Fool. And it really, like, how would you put this? It like, it made this whole Track Terror thing seem like kind of a monumental moment in governance for Terra.
So that aspect of it, I kind of like that publicity, like the whole, you know, blockchain DAO, you know, organizes themselves to make tax reporting and reporting requirements, you know, easier for themselves. I kind of like that narrative. But they were a bit off base when they tried to say that the current Luna price action was because of Track Terra.
Yeah. Just take the W, Poppy. You did it. Thank you. We all thank you.
I haven't seen the article, but I need to go and read it now just for that piece of content.
We'll put it in the show notes for sure, so everyone can go check it out. Luna all-time high. What are we at right now? Are we at like 64, 65?
We're pushing 67 right now.
Guys, there's no sign of that stopping. As long as Daniel and Abracadabra keep adding more MIM to the UST pool, this burn is going to take us like to $100.
So can you guys talk about that a little bit, Ryan and Poppy, the burn, what's going on there? What do you think the driver is?
Yeah, sure. So on Abracadabra, basically it allows you to leverage UST, and that leveraged UST is put into Anchor and it earns yield. And that UST is collateral to mint more MIM. So when you have a leveraged position on Abracadabra, your UST is basically used to mint more MIM. That MIM's used to buy more UST. That UST is then transferred to Anchor, stored as AUST, and then the process repeats and loops a few times. So it creates leverage buying demand for UST, increases the price of UST, which creates an arbitrage opportunity where Luna can be burned for UST. That UST can then be swapped for another stablecoin like USDT, and then that USDT can be used to buy more Luna, and the process can be repeated.
Happy, the thing that confused me a little bit about this is, I guess I expected it to happen pretty quickly. So they released the mempool and people put UST in. I expected the loops to happen a little bit quicker, but it seems like for each time they release more MIM, It seems to take like several days for that looping to happen. Is there a reason for that?
I think they're just trying to be efficient with gas.
Okay, so I've heard a lot about like gas on Ethereum, and like what is like burning gas and how does that work? Like the gas prices are too high. I've heard that, but I couldn't really figure out what that means.
So gas is a transaction fee that you pay to have a transaction processed on the blockchain.
Yeah, Ryan, you don't know this, but I do not know as much as these guys, or maybe you do.
I've been listening. I've kind of gathered that a little. I've never transacted on, and the main reason is I just look at the gas prices and just think it's absolutely crazy. Don't understand how people can operate there on a regular basis. I guess you have to have, you know, quite a large portfolio to be willing to take a $200-$300 hit per transaction. It just seems absolutely crazy to me.
Yeah, it's nuts. And so like Eli, I mean, that's the big issue with Ethereum is the block space is full. The transactions are insane to harvest rewards. Like I have some SushiSwap LP positions. Just to harvest the rewards cost me $200. So I just don't do it. And like you said, Ryan, like you just can't operate there unless your transaction size is 10K. Like if you're doing anything on Ethereum for less than 10K, it doesn't make any sense to pay the gas. Now, I mean, you could get into all kinds of arguments about like what the solution is, right? Is it, there's always a trade-off if you want to make it, or you have to make it more centralized. And so that's what you see with Solana. You know, even with Cosmos chains like Luna, you know, the number of validators is nowhere near as large as with Ethereum. So, you know, Ethereum's approach to bringing those gas prices down is through layer twos, that where you can take some of the computation off the main chain to these other layer two solutions and roll them back into the main chain for security. And I think that will end up being a good scaling solution for Ethereum long term, although not everyone agrees with me on that. But there's just like 100 different ways you can skin the cat, right? And there are all different trade-offs you can make. And I feel pretty comfortable, you know, with kind of the trade-offs that you know, Luna makes on the Cosmos ecosystem and the other Cosmos chains. You get a decent amount of decentralization. It's not as decentralized as Bitcoin or Ethereum. But you get speed and you can accomplish things you couldn't do otherwise, like auto compounding. You cannot auto compound on Ethereum because of the gas prices, unless someone's figured it out recently. But so, you know, things like Apollo or Spectrum can't exist there.
Well, technically there is auto compounding because, I mean, you have like Popsicle Finance. It's just, it needs to be done in scale and in order to be cost effective.
Yeah, and I guess that's true. A lot of Popsicle Finance is happening on Avalanche and Phantom, though, right?
No. Popsicle's main product is on Ethereum.
Is it?
Yep.
Okay. I stand corrected. So let me, I would put it this way. It's challenging to auto-compound on those. There, yeah, like you said, you can do it at scale with something like Popsicle Finance, but you can't just go do it yourself.
I think just going briefly back to the burn that we were just talking about, I think it's interesting how so I've seen a few comparisons that because ETH became, well, ETH started burning ETH as part of transactions a few months ago, right? And I've seen a few comparisons saying, oh, ETH burnt, we burnt a million ETH over this amount of time versus like, you know, 8 million that's been burnt across Luna over the last week. I mean, it doesn't even make Ethereum even close to being deflationary, right? Because they're still popping out rewards at a much higher rate than they are burning the gas. So I think that it's an interesting comparison that's being made, but it's not even close to being a comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I think that burning ETH as part of this, you know, transition to EIP 1559, it's great. Like, that's a positive development for ETH, but, you know, when it comes to tokenomics, I don't think anyone can beat the king, and the king is Luna, you know? Like, Luna's tokenomics are just incredible.
Have you got any thoughts about how much Luna might be burnt between now and the end of the year?
I don't see the current trend breaking, but again, like, I honestly don't know, like, what the considerations are with Abracadabra and the MIM UST pool. Like, I don't know what their plans are. They're gonna, you know, do 50 million a week. They already did almost, you know, 200 million this week, 200 million last. I don't know if they're gonna keep up with that. If they keep up with that, it's gonna be fucking insane.
Hey Poppy, do you know why they wouldn't allow more to be minted? Does it have something to do with the peg on MIM?
Well, I mean, you're gonna be putting some strain on Anchor, but we're not like seeing that just yet. I mean, that's where my concern is. And then if you have like a big whale deleverage that could potentially impact UST peg in the short term, I always wonder, like, you know, there's a bot that is burning Luna at rates that are insane. There's like multiple accounts or wallets burning Luna all at the same time. Like, is there the reverse if Luna depegs? I don't know. So it's, you want to be careful about putting too much stress on the ecosystem too fast. So I think they'd probably want to take it slow. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think the Anchor yield reserve has been building up nicely since the community pool burn, right, with the increased staking rewards. I think it's still inflationary at this point, but I guess there's a point where if we keep just putting UST into Anchor without any collateral, that could have an effect on the Anchor yield reserves. Go ahead.
So it's a really interesting dynamic because as more UST is minted, the price of Luna goes up, which allows more people to borrow more. So it's like you're balancing all of these different parameters.
I would be interested to see, are people pulling collateral out of Anchor in advance of like Stator and Astroport launches? I have no clue. I haven't looked at the data. Have you guys looked at that at all?
I have not looked at that.
Well, I think the so over the last few months, the liquid circulating supply of Luna has been generally on the increase. I think we went down to as low as sort of 95 million Luna in liquid circulation. And then we probably built all the way back up to about 130 million-ish. Obviously, over the last couple of weeks, as this burn's been happening, we've been going back down again. I think we're currently sitting around 115 million. I think what Stader have mopped up, I believe, around 5 million so far. And then I think that there are people who are probably currently unstaking, getting ready for Astroport, for the Luna B, Luna LP. And then also there's a lot of hype around Prism and wanting to utilize that function as well. So I think it'd be interesting to follow like the liquid circulating supply in terms of the dynamics over the coming months. You know, will people be unstaking and getting ready to potentially sell? Will they be looking to go into these other protocols that can, you know, probably increase this the returns on your Luna versus just plain staking? It's going to be really interesting.
You know, one of the other things we should bring up when it comes to, you know, locking up UST is there's a current proposal out. I think it's going live. The vote is going live on Olympus DAO for using UST as collateral to mint Ohm tomorrow. It might have gone live today. It might go tomorrow. So if there are any kind of Ohmy lunatic crossovers that are listening to this, make sure you get in there and vote, because that's another big place that, that UST could flow. So Ryan, one of the protocols that you've been, you know, super passionate about, super vocal about is Pylon. They've kind of been executing on a lot of the things that they said they were going to execute on and making a lot of progress recently. Do you want to give kind of the group an update on what you've seen out of Pylon that you're excited about?
Probably about a month or so ago, or kind of joining the Nacho Don bandwagon of appealing to be CEOs of various Terra protocols. And, you know, I'd been a long time follower of everything that's going on Pylon. And so kind of just wanted to hold them to account really on a bunch of things that they promised the community that, that weren't being delivered. Pleasantly surprising in terms of how much they have delivered over the last month or so. I think one of the things that's been particularly noticeable is the increased APR on the single staking for mine. They've released the airdrops from the projects that have launched on Pylon, and have got quite an interesting sort of like farming mechanism to release those airdrops. A couple of the things that I've noticed, there was recently a proposal that I believe passed to make the Nexus UST pools liquid. So potentially being able to sell your position in Nexus on the secondary market, which is going to be a really interesting concept. And then I think more recently, and this is not something I've looked too much into, but a proposal has gone out to protocol-owned liquidity within Pylon, which I think has been something that's been really popular, you know, just talking about Ohm and the addition to UST there. It's a really popular mechanism that people have been crying out for on the Terra ecosystem. So it'd be really interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah, let's talk about that, the liquid pools thing, because that's really compelling to me. What do you think the outcome of that would be? Ultimately, I think that it could probably end up resulting in even more money being allocated to projects that launch on pools, just because you know that, you know, if you need to in a crunch, you can get out, that there's a liquid market for your for the amount that you put in, you know, if you need to get out in a bind. What's your guys' take on that? And honestly, like, what's the next step there? Can you take those liquid positions and then, you know, use them on collateral as something on something like Mars protocol in the future? I think it opens up a lot of possibilities. I haven't fully processed them all yet.
On a basic level, I think it's going to be really interesting. So obviously the first one is Nexus, which is an already launched product, which has established a token price. So how that will trade on the open market, I would imagine like a slight discount to the market price of Nexus, because those positions are still locked up for some period. I think what will be really interesting is when projects launch on pools whose token isn't yet in the market. I think that will be really interesting in terms of the speculation around where that token price will land. So, like, for example, at the minute, White Whale is a Pylon pool where the token has not been released. I think if you were to put that into the market, it'd be really interesting to see where that fell. In terms of utilizing those positions as collateral, I think that's probably something I'd have to defer to Pappy on, a little bit beyond my technical knowledge.
So my opinion of this is, even though it's called liquid staking in name, it's not really liquid unless there's a buyer on the other end. Unless there's like some sort of like buyer last resort model. I haven't really looked into this too much. From what I understand, you're going to be buying these positions. So you're going to be buying the UST and the potential rewards in these positions. So chances are you're probably, if someone, the person on the buying end is probably going to be buying UST at a huge discount, assuming they're buying positions that are locked for, you know, 12 months or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't really consider the UST element of it. Like, I was thinking about like the tokens that are being released, but yeah, obviously you'd be buying their UST position as well. It's really interesting.
My guess is that it's going to open up a lot of opportunities for arbitrage initially when it comes out to whoever, you know, has it set up and ready to go, i.e. Poppy. Some new form of revenue, a new revenue stream for Poppy. I think it's interesting, like, because everything that's on top of, now you're talking about, you're essentially talking about a bond, right? Because you're talking about the, like, a UST amount, that a lump amount that's going to be sent back to you at the end of a period. So you're doing, and then the rewards that are coming on top of it. So essentially the math there is the exact same math you would do to value, you know, a treasury bond. Or something like that. And so there are a lot of dynamics. And then when you think about the composability of it that you could build on top of it that are pretty interesting. And then also just, you know, like you said, with White Whale, right? Like the ability to get price discovery, because you can imply whatever if that liquid derivative is selling, trading for, you can find an implied token price for White Whale before White Whale is openly open to be traded. And I think that ultimately is a good thing, right? Anytime you can try to find a fair value price for a token before it launches, it takes away some of the uncertainty around, you know, the token launch, the token generation event. So I think that there are layers and layers to this. And I don't know if someone out there has thought through all of them and they want to come on the show and explain them to me, we'd love to have you on, because I think there's a lot of cool things you could do with this. Either that, or I'm completely overthinking it and there's nothing that interesting.
No, I think it's really interesting, because if you're able to establish like some sort of market price for White Whale, they're also planning on actually launching the token via this liquidity bootstrapping pool, right? So then it gives like the market a really good idea in terms of where to buy in on that launch mechanism. So as you say, there's layers on layers here that we probably need some bigger brains to come and tell us about. I think the last thing I would say on Pylon is, I think there was so much focus on Pylon swaps as a value mechanism. And I think the improvements that they're making to the protocol make those swaps like increasingly less relevant as a launch model and as a governance benefit. And I think, you know, maybe Pylon ultimately results back in what its MVP was always supposed to be, which is this lossless investment platform utilizing Anchor as a back end. So I could see Pylon moving away from swaps, especially as they get like increased competition in the marketplace. You know, obviously they've been longtime competitors, or maybe by choice or not, with Starterra. And then I've seen another couple of protocols, like launchpad protocols that have come into launch. So I think one was Terraformer, and then another one brand new, which is Atlo. And then you've also got these, you know, you've got like Astroport launches via liquidity bootstrapping pools. You've got, I think we're probably just about to come on to community farming or the farmers market that Apollo have got to offer. So I think long term, probably Pylon moves away from these swap mechanisms and just goes back to its MVP.
I hope they do that. Because that swap thing was just, it caused so many problems. It was always going to be hard to make everyone happy, right? It was always going to be challenging to get enough, you know, a portion of the tokens to make everyone happy. And the pools, especially if the pools are liquid, That feels like the right product market fit. It does concern me a little bit, as you said, that Luna now has as many launch pads as it does protocols at this point. So we should probably start building projects that focus less on launch pads than projects that actually drive value for USD. But
I disagree. I think we just need to do post IDOs until forever.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as long as we're the first ones in and we have people to dump on, I think it'll be okay. But the Apollo one is like, we were going to cover that next because Halo's going out on it. And I think Apollo did a really good job with their community farming event. Who wants to take that? Who wants to take the Angel Protocol launching on Apollo?
I'll be honest. I don't know much about Halo Token.
Okay. So basically for anyone who participated in the Apollo community farming event, they're essentially offering that as a service to Angel to launch their, as one of the launch mechanisms for the Halo token. So essentially you take your Terra LP positions, whether that be Mind, Ankh, Mirror, or any of the M assets LP positions, and all of the yield, 100% of the yield from those LPs during the community farming event goes to farming Halo token at 5 cents per Halo. I believe there are 40 million Halo to be farmed. I think they've currently got an ETA of that ending at some point, sort of mid to late December. And then once that's finished, there'll be a 3-month cliff and then a 9-month vesting period for the Halo token.
Yeah, so this is another way, I think, yeah, playing off of what Apollo did. You know, I just don't think we're even going to see projects wanting to do swaps at all that can be dumped after just a couple of months. And so this is a way to get people to farm the token and with kind of longer vesting periods, essentially, right?
Well, I think a good thing about the community farming is that anyone who wants to be involved can get involved and can farm that token. Right? It's not limited to X number of wallets or you know, a wallet that's got X amount of mine or Starterra. Like, literally anyone can come to the Apollo farming event and farm Halo tokens if that's what they want to do. So it's a really, really inclusive way of getting the token into the hands of everyone.
So Ryan, do you know much about kind of like the value proposal of Halo token? I know part of it was, I think, like 20% of the value raised is going towards charity. But like, why would someone hold Halo token?
Right. So I did an AMA, a GTA AMA with the Angel team. And so I can probably partially answer this with caveats that I may be wrong. So obviously, essentially, like the...
Our entire show is with the caveat that we may be wrong. So right. you're in a safe space here.
Good. So essentially, obviously, like the whole idea of Angel is that they have perpetual endowment funds, right? So people deposit UST into these endowment funds, which then utilize Anchor and potentially other yield mechanisms to pay yield to charities in perpetuity. So, like, I think that the MVP of Halo is a UST growth mechanism is that it's essentially a black hole for UST. Like, once UST is put into these endowment funds, it essentially stays there forever and pays out the yield to charities. So you've got essentially like a continuously growing UST fund. One of the other interesting things that they revealed on the that also some protocols, and not just Terra protocols, but protocols based in other ecosystems as well, can gift or lend Angel tokens from their treasury that then Angel use to yield farm and then convert that yield into UST to also like continue to grow this UST fund for charities. Now the Halo mechanism itself, like the main purpose of it is for governance. So they have these, I can't remember, they call them DANOs centralized autonomous non-profit organizations. And they have like this top level DAO, and then these like individual charity DAOs that kind of have this governance function to make sure that the money is going to the right places and that the charities are also behaving themselves. Yes. Now, I believe there's a percentage of the yield. So like obviously like the largest percentage of the UST yield goes to the charities. There's also a percentage of the UST yield that goes fund that like keeps growing that endowment fund over time. And then there's a small percentage of the UST yield that goes back into essentially like being a yield for the Halo stakers. So essentially, like if you're a Halo staker, over time you get like a percentage, a small percentage of this ever growing UST, perpetual UST endowment fund. And that's essentially the value capture of the Halo token.
Ah, very cool.
You know, ultimately, you know, the Halo token, I believe it isn't kind of like a get rich quick scheme, right? Like a lot of the value in holding it is helping direct where the money goes. And, you know, if you have certain, you know, things that you care about a lot that you want to see this money directed to, you know, helping direct those funds.
Yeah. It exactly. also has Angel kind of like frame it as this like win-win-win like scenario where like the charities win, UST wins, and like the Halo stakers are essentially incentivized to give more to charity. They frame it in a really nice way.
Yeah, there's also there's some mechanism, and we'll post the article in the show notes where, you know, the longer you stake, the more voting power you have as well. So if this is something that you're really into, you know, get into this community farming event now so that when these tokens launch, you can stake, and, you know, the more you have earlier, you know, the better off you'll be in terms of, you know, directing funds. So really good stuff. You know, this is one of the protocols I love because it's, and this is what I love about Terra, is there are so many protocols doing things that aren't just copy pasta from other chains. And this is one of them. So it's a really exciting one.
That's all we have for this show. Unfortunately, I was blackmailed by the Kado guys, so we will never actually get into the FUD. They have some pictures of me wearing less clothing than I normally do in Portugal. So that's the end of kind of that saga. Thanks for watching. Please subscribe. Give us some feedback. If this video gets to 200 likes, Amani will buy me another MacBook Pro. And that is a promise. Thanks for everything, and goodbye. I love you.